Welcome this morning. Welcome to New Life. We're glad that you're here. If you're here with us for the first time, I'm really grateful that you chose to join us today. My name's Keith. I'm the pastor. Sometimes I admit that, sometimes I don't. And if you are with us for the first time this morning, you're catching us at the beginning of a series, a new series that's going to we're going to spend the next 4 Sundays talking about this series, and I titled it, it's a very subtle title, it's called Dinners with Sinners, and I figured we could just kind of, we could all embrace this idea that I don't know if there's anyone here this morning who would admit that they're not a sinner, but if you do, then you probably just became one, because then you probably lied, so we'll just get that all out of the way, right? We're all here this morning, we're all sinners in various ways and to various degrees, I guess we could admit to that. And so the next few weeks, we're just going to look at 4 times in the Gospel of Luke that Jesus either had dinner with sinners, or he talked about a dinner with sinners. You know, kind of one of the more famous ones I think Jason's going to do next week is the story of the prodigal son. And so we're going to look at these dinners that Jesus engages in with different sinners through the course of his ministry and of his time in the Gospels. I am, as a pastor, one of the things that I get to do periodically is I get to do weddings. And actually, some pastors I've talked to really hate doing weddings because it's a lot of stress. Can we all be honest? Anybody who had a wedding? Yeah, it was stressful, wasn't it? Mostly for the ladies. And the guys were just kind of along for the ride. And so the weddings kind of are a bit of a stress. A bit of a stressful experience, and occasionally what happens is I get asked to do weddings for people who are not part of our church community, because surprisingly enough, people actually like to get married in South County, Rhode Island. It's like kind of like a spot where people enjoy, even if they're not from here, they actually enjoy getting married here. And so periodically, I will get a request from someone saying, hey, I would really love to have my wedding. I'm having it somewhere in Narragansett or somewhere in Wakefield, and I just need somebody to do the wedding. Pastor, I need a minister to do the wedding. And so if they're willing to go through the premarital counseling, which I do with all the couples that I work with, I say, that's fine. I'm willing to do the wedding with you as long as you're willing to kind of put the work in on those premarital counseling sessions. And what happens is, you know, as we go through those premarriage counseling sessions, we actually start to kind of uncover stuff inside of their hearts and lives. And even though I don't really know them very well at all, after a few times of kind of talking about things that are going on in their lives, maybe how their parents, you know, marriage functioned, or how they kind of have their own view of marriage, and sort of you start to uncover these things that go on inside of people's hearts and inside of people's lives. And as we do that, I start to feel kind of connected with them. I start to feel kind of close with them, and they start to kind of feel a little bit connected. And I hope most of the time they enjoy, you know, the whole ceremony and the process that we go through. And so there's kind of this sense of obligation that they have because they have invited me into their life. And so as they've invited me into their life, they also kind of feel this obligation like, okay, we've got to invite you to the party, right? You're going to do all the work, so we got to invite you to the party and at least like give you the wedding meal and the wedding reception and the whole party thing. And so they feel obligated to invite me, even though they don't really know me all that well, honestly. And I feel obligated to go. Does that make sense? Because I'm, you know, I'm part of their wedding, I'm part of their ceremony, and I'm happy for them as a couple, even though I don't really know them, I don't know their family, I don't know their friends. And so what happens is I feel obligated to attend, they feel obligated to invite me. And then here's what happens with wedding receptions, right? Somebody sits down and decides who's going to sit where. I don't know who it was for your wedding, but somebody sat down and decided who's going to sit where. And hopefully when that person sat down and decided who was going to sit where, they kind of came up with an idea based on people that you know a little bit, right? And so hopefully you got to sit with people that you knew and had some kind of connection with, whether it's maybe family members or friends, sorry, who were also going to the wedding with you. And you got this chance, this opportunity just to kind of sit down with these people, and the wedding planner or whoever it is kind of puts that whole thing together. But here's what happens. There is, at every wedding, there is what I would call that table. Right? You know exactly which table I'm talking about. Right? There is that table where Uncle Johnny has to sit because Uncle Johnny doesn't get along with, you know, Aunt so-and-so, right? And so Uncle Johnny, maybe Uncle Johnny's the weird uncle. Maybe he's a little strange. He's a little odd. Maybe he's a little off. Maybe it's all the people that they don't really know what to do with. And so they just kind of say, here, let's throw them all at that table. And here's what happens, right? It is, right? It is the most awkward table at the wedding. So where do I get to sit? Hey, hey, you don't know anybody. We don't have any connection with you. You don't know anybody here. Nobody here knows you. So guess what? We're going to sit you at the awkward table. And here's the thing, right? I've said this before. I am an incredibly introverted person. And you can just imagine the scene that unfolds as they sit me down at the awkward table, and you look around and you say, "Dear God, I don't know anybody here. This is so, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. I don't know anything about how do I speak to these people?" And every once in a while, I have to go to these events without my wife. And that's the worst, because Rita, she's an extrovert. She's great. She's, you know, friendly. She'll talk to anybody. Me, I just want to just stick me in the corner. I just want to leave. I feel like there's these moments when I just feel like the only thing that I have to do is just get through dinner, eat, and then I can leave and not feel like I'm being rude. And so I kind of have these moments where I feel like the awkward table moment. I'm just sitting there. And maybe some of you have been placed at the awkward table. You don't have to raise your hands or anything. And if you planned a wedding, listen, this is no offense to you. It's no offense to the brides or the groom. I know they're doing their best to put people where they want to put them and, you know, kind of make everybody happy and maybe everybody feel at least a little bit comfortable. But if you've been sat at the awkward table, you know exactly what that feels like, right? It feels like, oh, like, oh yeah, we kind of had to invite you, so we're going to set you at this table and hope you have a good time, but, you know, we really couldn't figure out a good place for you to fit and a good place for you to connect. Maybe you've been to a party before where you were invited by a host to come and experience the party, and then you got to the party, and then everybody ignored you. Have you ever had that feeling? Yeah. Everybody ignored you, and you thought, oh, this is the worst thing. And if you're an introvert like me, you know, sometimes if you're an extrovert, you can kind of navigate your way through that because you're okay talking to people and you can kind of, you know, do the whole schmoozing thing and the whole small talking kind of thing. But if you're an introvert like me, all you want to do is like hide in the corner until everyone is looking the other way and so that you can just kind of jump out and no one will even know, because that's how I feel. Like nobody will even know that I left. Even the host wouldn't know that I left if I just kind of snuck out the side door. And what happens in those situations is this: we feel kind of unimportant, right? Have you ever felt that experience? You feel kind of unimportant. You feel overlooked. You feel like you might as well have not even showed up to the party. You might as well have not even showed up to the reception or to the event, because if you were going to show up and they were just going to be so busy that they couldn't even pay any attention to you, you just might as well not have even gone. It would have been a better use of your time to do something else to do. And what happens is when we get into those situations, we have a set of expectations. Whether we say it or not, we have a set of expectations about what should happen when we go to a party or to a reception or to an event like that. We feel like the host should kind of pay attention to us. We feel like they should welcome us, and we feel like they should kind of acknowledge at least the fact that we showed up at the party that they're throwing. And when those people don't live up to those expectations, we get incredibly disappointed. We get incredibly kind of this feeling like we're just overlooked, overwhelmed, ignored, and we don't even want to be there anymore. So as we're going to go through this series of messages, we are going to read a story this morning that is the ultimate awkward table moment. It's the ultimate awkward table moment. See, because what happens is we tend to read the Gospels and we think, oh, everything's so holy and everything's so righteous and everything's so, you know, kind of, you know, just kind of set up in order and everything's just so tight and connected. And we don't tend to read the Gospel with these awkward moments that are happening. And so this morning, we're going to invite you into an awkward moment that Jesus had in Luke chapter 7. In verse 36, we're going to begin there. This is how it begins. I'll just let you know what we're going to do this morning. We're going to kind of go verse, and then we'll pause for a little bit, and then we'll pick it up, and then we'll talk a little bit, and then we'll pick it up until we get to the end of verse 50. Here's what it says, chapter 7, verse 36. When one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, he went to the Pharisee's house, and he reclined at the table. Now, we'll just pause there for a minute. Jesus and the Pharisees, if you've read the Gospels, these guys do not get along very well, right? You remember that? You know, Jesus is constantly kind of pushing their buttons a little bit, and they're constantly trying to trip him up, and they're constantly trying to throw things in front of him that will trip him up and cause him to stumble in his theology, and they're kind of always looking. There's always this little animosity between Jesus and the Pharisees. So this idea that a Pharisee invites Jesus over for dinner is already a little bit awkward because they have not been getting along very well already in the gospel, even though it's early in Luke chapter 7. And so this Pharisee invites Jesus over for dinner and invites him, and Jesus decides, yes, I'm going to go to dinner with you. I'm going to sit down. I'll eat a meal with you. And again, as we talked about last week, we don't tend to invite people over for dinner that we don't want to get to know a little bit better or that we don't already know well already. You know, we look for people that we're already in relationship with to eat meals with, or we look to eat a meal with somebody that we would like to be in relationship with. And so Simon, this Pharisee, invites Jesus over for dinner, says, hey, Jesus, know you just a little bit more. I'd like to kind of figure out where you're coming from. Maybe I'd like to kind of figure out your angle on the Old Testament, kind of where things are going and what we're all about. And, you know, Jesus decides that he's going to accept the invitation. He shows up to dinner, and here's what happens, verse 37. A woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house. And so she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. And as she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears, and then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. Now we read, oh yeah, I've heard this story before, I know. This woman hears, hey, Jesus is at the house of a local religious leader, and she decides, uninvited, no one said, hey, why don't you show up? She decides she's going to go crash the party at the religious leader's house, right? That's what's happening here. And it's a little bit awkward as you read even those two verses, because I don't know, I've been to parties, I've been to wedding receptions and stuff like that. I've never seen anyone come into a room and start weeping, crying, and pouring her tears down on anybody's feet. I don't know, have you ever seen that before? It's a little strange, right? And if you saw it, I guarantee you would say, awkward moment, right? You know, you would kind of think, oh, I'm not so sure what's going on here. I'm not so sure whether this is appropriate. I'm not so sure what's supposed to be happening. Here's what happens. Jesus is at a respectable dinner party with a respectable guy in the community and probably with his other friends and his other, you know, people who were in his circle. And this woman, who is very unrespectable, if you want to put it nicely, this very unrespectable woman decides that she's going to show up at the respectable dinner party and she's going to make an absolute scene in the middle of the party. That's what's happening. And here's what Luke tells us about this woman. He says she was a woman who was known to have lived a sinful life. She was a woman that everybody in the community knew who she was. Some would say she might have been a prostitute. Others say she might have been an adulteress, a person who had engaged in an adulterous affair with somebody else. And all we know is that this woman, everybody in the community knows about her sin. It basically follows her around everywhere that she goes. She has a reputation in the community. And so all of the people at the respectable dinner party when the unrespectable woman shows up, you guarantee, because you know exactly what would happen, every head turns, right? Is that who I think it is? Her. Because this is Simon's party, and Simon's a respectable Pharisee in the community. I mean, he's a religious leader. He's got a reputation to uphold, and her reputation doesn't quite fit with his reputation. And then when she shows up, everything that she does is inappropriate, right? Can we all agree on that? It's just not appropriate. She stands behind Jesus. Now think about this awkward table moment. This hasn't happened at the worst wedding reception that you've been at, right? She stands behind Jesus at the table and she's weeping. And as she's weeping, her tears are falling down on Jesus' feet. And then maybe she notices, hey, her tears are falling down on Jesus' feet. And she says, maybe this is inappropriate, so I'm going to get down. And she begins to dry his feet with her hair and kisses his feet, right? That has not happened at any awkward receptions that you've been at, right? So this whole thing is happening. Everything that she does is inappropriate. Everything that she does is out of step with what would have been expected and what could have been expected of a person at a respectable dinner party. She and everything that she's doing does not belong at Simon's party. We'll pick it up in verse 39. It says, when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who's touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner. Simon, inside of his head, is thinking what everyone else at the table is thinking. Right? And Simon is the guy who gets kind of singled out in the story, but he's just thinking what everyone else is thinking. If Jesus knew who this was, he would stop this. If Jesus knew who this was, he would tell her to get out. If Jesus knew her reputation, if Jesus knew what she was all about, if he knew what she had done and where she had been and who she had been with, then Jesus would cut this whole thing off and he would push her out, because I know that's what I would do. That's what I want to do, because it's my party, my house. My friends are watching this woman make an absolute scene of herself in the middle of my party. This is not appropriate. Simon's totally shocked by the woman, and he's totally shocked that Jesus isn't doing anything about it. I mean, because he says, if this guy was a prophet, I mean, if he really kind of could see inside of people's hearts, and if he can really understand the motivations of a person's soul, then he would know what kind of a woman this is, and he would not want anything to do with her. He would push her aside, and he would ask her to leave. Simon's opinion of Jesus maybe confirms to me, at least, that he invited Jesus with the impression that Jesus had something to teach him, that maybe Jesus had something significant to say, that maybe Jesus was even a prophet that God had sent to the nation of Israel. And so Simon invites him under this impression, and his impression of Jesus starts to go rapidly downhill as this whole scene unfolds. I mean, if this guy was a prophet, he would know. If he doesn't even have to be a prophet, right? If he just listened to what everybody else in the community was saying about this woman, he would know who she is. Who she was, he would definitely stop it. Here's what happens. Jesus tells a story. You're always in trouble when Jesus tells a story to you. It never goes well. When Jesus tells stories to you. And Jesus answered him in verse 40. Simon, I have something to tell you. Not a good start. Not a good start. Tell me, teacher, which you may not want to say if you ever have Jesus say, I want to tell you a story. Tell me, teacher, he said. Two people owed money to a certain money lender, and one owed him 500 denarii and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, and so he forgave the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more? And Simon replied, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt forgiven. You have judged correctly, Jesus says. It's a very simple story. Some of the stories that Jesus tells are longer and more complex, and there's a lot more going on. Very simple story. It's two people who owed one person money. One person owed a small amount of money, and the other person owed a large amount of money. And the person who was owed the money decided that he was going to forgive both debts. Took the large debt, and took the small debt, and he said, both of you guys can go free. You don't owe anything anymore. And then he turns to Simon and says, okay, Simon, so in this story, who is going to love more? And you can almost hear, right? You can almost hear Simon's irritation with this story, can't you? Well, I suppose it would be the one who owed him more money. And you can kind of feel his irritation with even being asked this question, because I kind of have a feeling that Simon knew where Jesus might have been going with this story. That Simon had a feeling that Jesus was kind of pushing his buttons just a little bit, because Jesus has this habit of pushing people's buttons just a little bit. And so he says, well, here's what would happen. The person who was forgiven more would obviously love more, Jesus. That's clear. And then Jesus goes on and begins to make the application to Simon and begins to make the application to the rest of us as he says, here's what happened in this party that you invited me to. Here's what happened at this dinner that you called me to in verse 44. Then he turned toward the woman and he said to Simon, which is an interesting, you know, kind of fact. He turns to the woman, but he talks to Simon. He says, do you see this woman? I came into your house and you didn't give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You didn't give me a kiss, but this woman, from the time I entered, has not stopped kissing my feet. You didn't put oil on my head, but she's poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven little, loves little. And then Jesus said to her, your sins are forgiven. And the other guests began to say among themselves, who is this who even forgives sins? And Jesus said to the woman, your faith has saved you. You can go in peace. And Simon doesn't have anything else to say in the story. He's quiet as Jesus makes the application. And Simon can't even argue the point, because here's what happened. Simon invited Jesus over for dinner and treated him like he was overlooked, unimportant, and like he didn't matter. He said, I want you to come to dinner. Maybe it was like the right thing to do. Maybe it was a respectable thing to do. Maybe it was a thing that he thought he was supposed to do. He had to kind of check Jesus out and give a religious opinion about Jesus. He invites Jesus over for dinner and then completely ignores him, completely treats him like it didn't matter that Jesus even showed up, didn't bother to wash his feet, didn't bother to put oil on his head, didn't bother to kiss him on the cheek, just said, hey, come on over and I'm going to treat you like it doesn't matter. Showed up, and I'm going to treat you like it's unimportant. And then this woman, this unrespectable, sinful woman that everybody knows who she is and what she's done, she comes into the party and she shows how stingy Simon is. And he doesn't like it, because you wouldn't like it either, would you? I wouldn't like it either. I wouldn't like Jesus to turn to the woman and say, look at what she's done. Look at how she's treated me. And then look at what you didn't do. I mean, look at the way that she responded to me. And look at the way that you couldn't even be bothered to give me the time of day when I walked into your room and sat down at your table to have dinner with you. So she understands Simon, that you don't understand. She gets something that you don't get, because you've got all of the religious training, you've been, you know, you've studied, and you've got all of the knowledge, and you've got everything inside of your head, and there's nothing going on inside of your heart. And she gets it, and you have missed it, Simon, because you feel like you've got this whole thing figured out, you've kind of got your religious game together, and you think that you can sit there, and you can talk down to her, and you can look her, and you can criticize her for who she is and what she's done, and your heart is so hard, and your heart is so stingy, and your heart is just so Grinch-like, if you want to use that term, that you can't even see how tiny it is, and you can't even see what's not happening inside of your heart when I showed up. It says she has experienced something that you haven't experienced yet. She has experienced something deep inside of her heart and inside of her soul that the only proper response that she can think of is what you look at and say is indecent. It's what you look at and you say it's inappropriate. It's what you look at and you say it's unrespectable and it's indecent, and it's exactly what she needs to do. You don't get it. And you'll look down on it and you'll say, I can't believe that she showed up, and I can't believe that she dares to touch Jesus. I can't believe that she dares to think that she could be invited to this party. I can't believe that a person like that would touch a person like this. And Jesus says the only proper response for someone who's been forgiven so much is for her to love so extravagantly that it absolutely puts you to shame. Because you don't understand it. You don't get it. She loves because she has been forgiven and she knows it. She's not forgiven because of what she does, because she wets his feet and because she kisses his feet. She's not forgiven because of that. Jesus says she's already been forgiven. She showed up here in a place where I've already had a conversation with her. She knows what I have offered to her. She showed up just to celebrate her love for me. Because something happened in her life. Jesus does not, it's interesting, he does not say, oh no, she's not a big sinner. He says her sins, and they are many, are forgiven. He doesn't say, oh no, it didn't matter. What she did wasn't really a big deal. It didn't really offend anybody. It didn't really hurt God. It wasn't really a big deal. He says her sins, and they were many, but they've all been forgiven. She understands what it is to be forgiven. She was a, if you want to use this term, she was a major sinner. And she was majorly in need of forgiveness. And this is what Jesus offers to her. And Simon sits there in his just kind of chair and judges everyone around him, including this woman, and he doesn't realize the depth of his own sin. Doesn't realize the depth of his own disobedience to God. Doesn't realize the way that his heart, his own heart, has grown hard to God and to his grace in his life. And Simon misses this key thing. Right? It's easy to compare ourselves to everyone else. And we could look around and we could say, well, compared to her, I'm just a minor sinner. Compared to him, I'm just a little tiny sinner. I mean, that's the major sinner over there. And Simon doesn't realize, we don't realize, that when we compare ourselves to each other, we're missing the point. We're supposed to compare ourselves to God, to what he's called us to. And when we compare ourselves to God, to his holiness, to his absolute perfection, we are all major sinners. And we are all majorly in need of forgiveness. And some of us forget that from time to time. Some of us forget how gracious and how merciful God has been to us. We lose sight of it. We think, well, I wasn't really that bad. And I hadn't really done so many terrible things that that person had done. And I hadn't really been such a bad person. I just kind of been all bad person. Jesus says, no, here's the thing, guys. We're all big sinners. You could say what you want. And you say, no, I'm not. Well, sorry, I hate to break it to you this morning. We are all big sinners. And the only appropriate response when we understand God's forgiveness to us, the only appropriate way for us to show our love back to God is always inappropriate. It's always something that we would look at and say, that was too much. It's always something that we feel like, if I were to show my love for God that way, then people will look at me strange. Perfect. It's exactly how it's supposed to be. If I were to show my great love for God that way, people in church, the religious people, will kind of look at me and say, wow, you're getting a little radical with this thing. I mean, you're just kind of getting a little over the top with this whole loving Jesus thing. Like, maybe that's a little too much. Maybe you should just kind of tone it back. No. Don't tone it back. Don't pull the reins in. Let it go. It's okay. It's exactly what Jesus is looking for from you. Not some reserved kind of decent golf clap response to Jesus. He's looking for something that would stir your heart, that would stir your soul, that would say, I can't believe that Jesus would rescue someone like me. Because I feel it. Weight of what he forgave me from. Even if it looks minor compared to someone else, it's major compared to who God is and compared to the standard that he has set for my life. The only appropriate response when we understand the forgiveness that God has offered to us is absolutely scandalous. It's inappropriate. It's over the top. It's too much. It's such that people will look at you funny and you'll have to say, I'm sorry. I can't help but express the love that I found because Jesus saved me. So here's the thing this morning. We can respond in two ways. we can respond to the grace and the forgiveness that Jesus offers to us, like Simon. And we can sit here and we can say, I'm so grateful that God has given me grace and mercy and forgiven me. And then we can look around at all the other people. We can say, can't believe God offered grace to him. Because clearly he did not deserve it. I can't believe that Jesus forgave all of their sin. I mean, I could see maybe forgiving some of their sin, but there's some stuff that they've done that I know about, heard. There's some stuff that they've done. There's some places that they've been. I can't believe Jesus would forgive them. We could sit here in our self-righteous seats and we could kind of look around at all the other people and say, how are you worshiping Jesus? How are you showing love for Jesus? That's kind of inappropriate. That's a little over the top. That's a little too much. Why don't you pull it back just a little bit? Or we could put ourselves in the shoes of the sinner. We could put ourselves in the place where all of a sudden the weight of what we've done, where we've been, how we have offended God kind of sinks into our heart, sinks into our soul, and we realize that when Jesus looked at us and said, you can go in peace because your sins, and they were many, they've been forgiven, when that kind of sinks into our heart, then all of a sudden we can open up our soul and we can respond to Jesus with everything that we have. And we don't have to worry about what the person next to us thinks. We don't have to worry about how someone sitting in the back is going to judge us and think anything about us. I don't care. Is that okay? I don't care. Because what they think doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is what Jesus thinks. And when Jesus invites the sinner to sit down, he says, I'm going to forgive every single one of your sins. And we realize we don't belong at the table. Can we agree with that? I don't belong at the table with Jesus. I don't belong there. There's nothing that I've ever done in my life that would earn me the right to sit at the table. And Simon sat there with Jesus, the Son of God, sitting at the table and thought that he was the one who was making the invitation. He thought that he was the important one. He thought that he belonged at the table. And the woman recognized, I don't belong at this table. I shouldn't be here by any rights. What I've done and where I've been and how I've lived my life, I don't belong at this table. But Jesus is here, and he invited me to the table. And so regardless of what anybody else thinks, I'm coming to the table. I'm going to sit down at the table with Jesus. If I have to wet his feet with my tears and wipe, well, I don't have any hair to wipe with, but I'll borrow some of yours. If I have to, you know, whatever I have to do to show my love for Jesus, that's what I will do. Because that's what he deserves. Because he forgave me from way more than you know, and probably way more than I know. Jesus invites. Says the one who's been forgiven only a little recognizes and thinks, oh, my sin, it was just little. Well, then you're going to love little. You're going to go through the rest of your life, and the way that you treat Jesus is going to be like an afterthought, overlooked. But when you realize, for some of us, we're realizing it again this morning. When you realize just how much he's forgiven you, way again. You'll never say, Jesus, you're an afterthought. Jesus, you're overlooked. Jesus, you don't matter. Say, Jesus, everything that I have belongs to you. Because you invited me to come sit at the table. You offered me forgiveness. You said I could go my way in peace. And I've never felt that before. We've been forgiven so much. Our only response is to love him much. Lay down our lives before him. And ask our worship team to come. We're going to close with a song. As we close, I'm just going to ask you to feel it this morning. Does that make sense? I'm just going to ask you to let God let you feel it this morning. Feel the weight of your sin. Feel what you've been forgiven of when Jesus lifted it off your shoulders. And then I want you to sing like you don't care who else is listening. Because you shouldn't. And I want you to lift up your praise before God like you don't care who else hears it. And you don't care what anyone else who's sitting in this room thinks. Because here's the thing. No one else who's sitting in this room matters. The only thing that matters is what Jesus thinks about your worship and your response to him this morning. Let's pray.